tuned for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Hello and welcome to our listeners, to all of you who have tuned in today. This is the Leologos Radio, the global Greek radio program, which is broadcast on 27 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Dr. Michael Nevradakis, and today I am glad to be back with you for the first new English language broadcast of the Leologos Radio in over a year, an absence which was not intended to be nearly this long, but sometimes life gets in the way, including a dissertation, a graduation, a new academic career, health, and health once more. But it's great to be back, and what a show it is that we have in store for you today. On our program today, as part of the Leologos interview series, we are speaking with professor and scholar of international law, Dr. Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois College of Law. Dr. Boyle has in the past legally represented such groups as the Palestinians, the Hawaiian Independence Movement, and the Bosnians during the conflict in the Balkans in the 1990s, in addition to taking the likes of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and Tony Blair to the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal and getting them convicted. Today, though, Dr. Boyle is going to speak to us about the hot-button issue of the Macedonia name dispute, and specifically, he will speak about the PRESPA agreement signed between Greece and its neighbor, the country that has been calling itself Macedonia, and which, according to this agreement, will now be calling itself North Macedonia. Speaking as part of a full-fledged interview for the first time to any Greek media outlet, Dr. Francis Boyle will provide his analysis and his argument regarding the reasons why he believes the PRESPA agreement is invalid according to international laws and conventions, while also discussing the legal means through which this agreement can be overturned. He will also address some of the broader geopolitical implications of this agreement as it stands today. Now, for our Greek audience, please keep this in mind as we get this interview started. Dr. Boyle, just as almost everyone else outside of Greece has done for the past 20-plus years, refers to Greece's neighbor simply as Macedonia. Now, we may not agree with this, and we may understand the history behind this, but for most non-Greeks, the country has been, unfortunately, Macedonia for a quarter century or more. So, for the purposes of this interview, which is excellent and is absolutely worth your time spent listening, please do not get hung up on hearing the name Macedonia, but instead pay attention to the content and the substance of Dr. Boyle's responses, as many of these issues that are discussed are often not discussed openly in any sort of public forum, much less in the Greek media. So with that being said, coming up right now is the Leologos interview series and our discussion with Dr. Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law, here on Leologos Radio. The Leologos interview series, our weekly segment featuring interviews on matters pertaining to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, coming up next here on Leologos Radio. Joining us today on Leologos Radio and the Leologos interview series is international lawyer and professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law, Dr. Francis Boyle. In an illustrious legal career, Boyle has represented Bosnia, Palestine, and Hawaiian independence groups in the international arena, and has served on the legal team which led to the conviction of George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Tony Blair for war crimes as part of the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Commission. Having first spoken on the Galagos Radio back in 2016, Professor Boyle returns to our program today to discuss the hot-button issue of the Macedonia name dispute and the PRESPA agreement. Professor Boyle, welcome back to our program today.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for having me on, and my best personal regards to all my friends there in Greece.
Let's dive right in to the main issue at hand, the Macedonia name dispute and its purported solution, the PRESPA agreement, which was signed between Greece and its neighbor, which was known as the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, or FYREM, last June. You've recently given interviews to media outlets in Greece's neighbor, asserting that the PRESPA agreement is invalid and specifically that it violates the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. Let's start by asking, what is the Vienna Convention and how is the PRESPA agreement in violation of this convention?
Well, Michael, I'd like to suggest, before we get into the technicalities here, and I'm happy to answer that, we look at the politics. When I first read this agreement at the request of the Macedonians, what I noticed was that it had been brokered and negotiated by Matthew Nimitz. And Nimitz is a longtime U.S. imperial apparatchik. You have to understand that. And he's done work for the United States government all up and down. So basically, the Americans were using him as a cutout in order to accomplish their objectives here, which, as I see it overall, was to get Macedonia into NATO by hook or by crook. Second, if you look at Nimitz's record here, he's a trustee of Central European University in Budapest, and we all know that's George Soros. He also is in cahoots with Soros. So that seems to me what the geopolitics here. Second, they say that this agreement, which is in English, as you know, and it's very technical if you go through it, and I did read it to give that interview to the Macedonian news media. It's highly technical. It is said it was drawn up by Brookings. But again, Brookings here is just being used as a cutout for the State Department. It's clear if you read through these documents, and I do this professionally, these documents, this PRESPA was drawn up either by lawyers who worked for the United States Department of State or used to work for the United States Department of State and were hired by Brookings to do this job. So we have to look, as I looked at it in going through the document, within this context of American foreign policy and what their objectives are here. And basically to impose this on Macedonia, to impose it on Greece, and for the purpose of getting Macedonia into NATO, which they have now done. So mission accomplished. And also, the other thing you have to keep in mind here, the documents are all in English, and the agreement is in English. My understanding, a translation was presented there to the Greek Parliament and the Macedonian Parliament in Slavic and Greek, but you really don't know what those translations said. The Americans do stuff like this all the time, where they'll negotiate an agreement in English, then translate it to be imposed on foreigners, then translate it into the local languages for domestic consumption, and sometimes the translations are completely bogus. This happened in the Israeli-Egyptian peace treaty, which I also analyzed in my capacity there for the Palestinians, where all the documents were in English and was negotiated by President Carter under his auspices. But when it was presented to the two parliaments in Egypt and Israel, it was translated into Arabic and Hebrew by someone. And it turns out, if you read the local news media, I just read the English version, English press there, It's like they had two different treaties, that the leaders were lying to their own people about what these documents really contained in order to get them through the parliament. So, I think your scholars there really have to look and see what that translation was all about there in Greece, and also what was the translation there in Slavic to be presented to the Macedonian parliament. I don't know. But the Americans have pulled these types of tricks before on translations. And that then gets us into the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. Both Macedonia and Greece are a party to the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties that governs everything possible with respect to treaties, and how treaties are to be dealt with internationally by governments and also by the International Court of Justice. So with respect to this translation issue, and I don't know what, you know, what they presented there to the Greek Parliament, what the Greek version of this said, but you can invalidate a treaty on Article 49 of the Vienna Convention on grounds of fraud. If a state has been induced to conclude a treaty by the fraudulent conduct of another negotiating state, the state may invoke the fraud as invalidating its consent to be bound by the treaty. So, depending on what the translation said, Greece might be able to invoke one or more grounds here of the Vienna Convention to invalidate this treaty, if in fact that is the case, and I don't know. As for Macedonia, it was explained to me by a professor of political science there, not a lawyer, but a professor of political science, who I take it she knew what she was talking about, that the treaty was rammed through the Macedonian parliament in violation of the Macedonian Constitution. There was a blatant violation, apparently, of the Macedonian Constitution that would have required, I guess, a referendum and different procedures to approve a treaty of this nature, because it called for changes to their constitution. Well, if that is the case, and again, I'm just here at a distance, but I expressed my opinion then that a subsequent government there in Macedonia could invalidate that treaty under Article 46 of the Vienna Convention, that says a state may not invoke the fact that its consent to be bound by a treaty has been expressed in violation of a provision of its internal law regarding competence to conclude treaties as invalidating its consent, unless that violation was manifest and concerned a rule of its internal law of fundamental importance. So I emphasize, you can invalidate a treaty there in Macedonia if the violation was manifest and concerned a rule of its internal law of fundamental importance. And as explained to me by this professor of political science there in Macedonia, who opposed the treaty, and I have to assume she knew what she was talking about, the violation of the Macedonian Constitution was blatant and manifest, and it concerned a rule of its internal law of fundamental importance, that is, its constitution. So there's no law of more fundamental importance to a state than its constitution. So on the basis of what she told me, I expressed that opinion. So that's, you know, where I see it as of today. Also, with respect to Greece, Article 48 error, that needs to be considered. So, you know, you have scholars over there in Greece, I guess, that could look into the congruence of the Greek translation with the English documents, because it was drafted by de facto State U.S. State Department lawyers, and that is the basis of the agreement. That is, in the event there is any dispute here, they have to go back to the English language version of the prepta, and that's what Nimitz and his coterie of de facto State Department lawyers drafted. So, Michael, that's just my reading here of these documents and the process from an American perspective. Obviously, you know, everyone there in Greece, you're entitled to your perspective. I know it's a highly emotional issue, and it is in Macedonia, too. I don't have a horse in this race. I'm just trying to look at it as objectively as I can and explain it, though, you know, I have a lot of friends there in Greece, and, you know, I have some friends there in Macedonia.
Well, you certainly raised the many issues that we're going to come back to, Professor Boyle, concerning Matthew Nemitz, concerning the expansion of NATO in the region. But let's pick up on this last point and the possibility of disputing the PRESPA agreement on the grounds that it was not ratified in a constitutional manner. This argument has actually been made.
No, it according to this political scientist, and I take it she knows what she's talking about, it expressly violated the Macedonian Constitution. Now, I had read a short note on the ratification there in Greece. From what I read, it did not necessarily violate the Greek Constitution. So I don't know about that. You'd have to talk to your constitutional law experts over there. But I do raise the question of the Greek translation of the English documents. Who prepared this translation? And was this translation of the English documents a fair and accurate representation of what the purposes said, or what was a fraud perpetrated on the Greek Parliament? I can't answer those questions. I just raised them, Michael.
Well, just to clarify, even for our listeners, arguments that have been made in both countries that start with Greece's neighbor, the argument there has been made that, for instance, their president has not signed off on these constitutional amendments that were passed through parliament in that country. And a referendum that was held in October did not meet the required constitutional threshold of participation of 50% plus one. In Greece, there's a bit of a gray area in that the Greek constitution says that international agreements need to be ratified by two-thirds of the parliament, a supermajority, but this was passed with a simple majority. So it does sound that,
Michael, what you're telling me, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, these are very technical legal questions. If that is correct, then there is also a serious problem over there in Greece as well, and that Greece might be able also to invoke Article 46 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, that this purpose is invalid because it was in manifest violation of the Greek Constitution. So that needs to be nailed down, I think, by your constitutional law experts over there in Greece. Understand, I'm not, you know, an expert on the Greek Constitution, but that's a very important point you just raised now.
Now, the Russian government, and specifically through statements that were made by their foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, has also called into question the validity of the PRESPA agreement in accordance with the resolutions of the UN Security Council regarding the Macedonia issue. Now, is this an agreement that a member of the United Nations Security Council, such as Russia, for instance, could conceivably veto? And could such a veto actually strike down this agreement?
Well, let me say this. If the agreement violated Security Council resolutions, and you have to understand, I have not read these resolutions, so I can't express an opinion on that. But the United Nations Charter clearly provides that in the event there is a conflict between the terms of the United Nations Charter and any other type of international agreement, then the provisions of the Charter prevail. And therefore, if we are dealing here with a Chapter 7 UN Security Council resolution that this agreement violates, yes, I think you have a very good argument that the agreement itself is also invalid for these grounds. But again, you would have to take your scholars there and further develop that argument made by Foreign Minister Lavrov. The problem is that at this point, you know, Macedonia is in NATO. The deed has been done. So I don't really see this being undone by the Security Council. But, you know, your scholars would have to look into this. And indeed, that, let me get that article of the UN Charter, Article 103. In the event of a conflict between the obligations of the members of the United Nations under the present charter and their obligations under any other international agreement, their obligation under the present charter shall prevail. So an obligation would be a Chapter 7 Security Council resolution, which is would be binding on all UN member states. And if this PERPSA violates that Security Council resolution, then, of course, both Greece and Macedonia, new governments, would have the capability, again, to find that the agreement is invalid. Now, I don't believe that that's going to prevent Macedonia, you know, from moving forward in its membership in NATO. But yes, you have an additional argument, and you know, you could make that argument as well under the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties, Article 53, treaties conflicting with the peremptory norm of general international law, jus cogens. You could certainly argue that it violates the terms of the United Nations Charter. So, sure, there are grounds there, again, that need to be considered by your Greek scholars.
Now, expanding upon this previous point, would you say overall that the PRESPA agreement is a done deal? So, for instance, what I mean here is that in Greece, an argument that's being made by the main opposition party is that the PRESPA agreement is a bad deal for Greece, but nevertheless, it cannot actually be disputed or overturned. It's too late now. It's final. And Greece must abide by it and stick to it. So you began to address this when we talked about the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. But what does international law generally say about the process in which such agreements can be disputed? And what legal avenues exist to do this?
Well, what I'm saying here is I think Macedonia is now a member of NATO and it's going forward. I don't see that stopping. But I think a subsequent government in Greece, if what you're telling me is correct, and your constitutional law scholars and your international law scholars out there research these points that I'm discussing, then a new government in Greece could certainly denounce the PREPSA, yes, and a new government in Macedonia likewise could denounce the PREPSA. I don't believe that that's going to affect Macedonia's membership in NATO, but I know the opposition in both countries, you know, feel very strongly that this PREPSA is unacceptable for a variety of reasons. Now, personally, I would like to see, you know, an agreement between Greece and Macedonia that solves the title issue. And I think that could have easily been done without all the rest of this agreement between you and NATO. But that isn't what happened. So it would really be up to a new government in Greece to denounce this agreement and or a new government in Macedonia to denounce this agreement. But from what you're telling me, it sounds as if there would be legal grounds under the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties for a new government in Greece to do this. And I, from what this political scientist told me in Macedonia about their constitution, there would be legal grounds for the a new government in Macedonia to denounce it and, you know, come up with a new. It's not going to affect, I believe, Macedonia's membership in NATO, but, you know, to come up with some other type of agreement over the name, which I understand that's the basic issue here.
Now, there's also some other issues that have come up as a result of the PRESPA agreement. on the part of Greece, for instance, there was a recognition of a Macedonian ethnicity and a Macedonian language. If the Prespa Agreement was overturned at some point in the future by either country, what might follow? What might be the aftermath of such an outcome? And would there still be some sort of precedent set just by the fact that this agreement did exist at some point? For instance, on the part of Greece, would this fact that the current government has recognized the existence of a Macedonian language, for instance, would that be something that would carry forward even if the Prespa Agreement were to be overturned?
Well, in that respect, you are right, Michael, that basically you have some sort of de facto recognition on both sides of these other issues. And, one would hope that they could be sorted out in good faith on the part of new governments on both sides, yes. But there's recognition, it's de facto. I'm saying that right now it's de jure. But even if the Prespa were to be invalidated, you'd sort of start from there saying, well, you already recognize this, that, the other thing. So all this would have to be sorted out. But I think it could be sorted out without this horrendous Prespa agreement. Between you and me, and I, it's basically subordinates Macedonian sovereignty to Greece. And I don't really think that's a healthy situation for either Greece or Macedonia. I don't see how that is going to solve this dispute. I don't see how it is going to be able to continue into the future. But I'm just speaking here as an American. You know, I don't really live over there. I've been to Greece and I have a lot of friends there. I haven't been to Macedonia, but, you know, I dealt with the Balkans over there for the Bosnians and the Kosovars, so I have followed these matters.
Now, we're speaking on the air with Dr. Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law, here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Now, continuing on this topic of the language, the Macedonian language that I mentioned a moment ago, there's an interesting argument being made over here. The argument was made by proponents of the agreement on both sides that the Macedonian language was already recognized by the United Nations in 1977 and that this recognition was accepted by Greece at that time. Although my reading, just speaking personally, of the proceedings from that UN meeting in 1977 doesn't really reveal such a recognition. But in any event, that's the argument that was made. Now, if a language was already recognized by the UN and by a country such as Greece in 1977, why would it need to be recognized again a second time? Because we're told that that's what the Prespa Agreement is doing in part. It recognizes the existence of a Macedonian language. And can you think of any similar instance in the history of international law where something has had to be recognized twice?
Well, first of all, and again, I'm not familiar with all the facts you're mentioning, but generally speaking, you know, international law doesn't recognize languages. It recognizes states and it recognizes governments and things of that nature. Second, my understanding, and, you know, with all due respect to the Macedonians, I believe they all speak South Slavic there in the former Yugoslavia. And so what we've had with the, you know, dissolution of the former Yugoslavia is for nationalistic reasons, everyone to start to call South Slavic by the name of their nationality. I'm not sure if that's exactly what happened there in Macedonia, but it has happened elsewhere in the Balkans. So, you know, I would think this issue could be finessed one way or the other, and but that, you know, that's the way it is. But generally speaking, you don't have agreements recognizing languages except in the interwar period between the First and the Second World War. There were minority treaties concluded that did apply to the entire former Yugoslavia, at that time the Kingdom of the Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes, directly on point. And those treaties if I remember correctly, I studied them a long time ago, I believe those treaties recognized languages. But in the post-World War II era, you know, recognition of languages, I don't think is something that, you know, happens at this level of state-to-state operation.
Now, we've heard from various international media outlets and commentators that the Macedonian name dispute is simply another example of nationalism in the Balkans that has run amok. I believe it was Deutsche Welle, the German national broadcaster, which recently called the dispute bizarre. I believe that's the word that they used. But if the dispute is so bizarre and it's simply a petty nationalistic quarrel, then why have such actors as the State Department and NATO and the European Union and the governments of countries such as Germany been so adamantly in favor of the agreement and so involved in this process and so adamant that the agreement must be enacted and must be enforced?
Well, you know, Michael, I've been involved in the Balkans directly since, you know, December of 1992, when I volunteered my services to the Republic of Bosnia-Herzegovina free of charge. So I've been following these issues. These are very serious issues. And a lot of people have died over there in the Balkans over these issues. And it does need to be resolved. But regretfully, I don't think this PREPSA does it. I think what happens is the State Department is basically decided to subordinate Macedonia to the control of Greece. There's very little sovereignty left here for Macedonia. If you read through the document, getting into all sorts of issues that normally states would not surrender to the control of another state. And over the long haul scheme of things, then I just don't see that this document is going to solve anything. What the Germans, you know, they're doing what the Americans tell them to do. They want to get Macedonia into NATO. And that was what this was all about, to get Macedonia into NATO by hook or by crook. And Nimitz and his de facto State Department lawyers succeeded here. And that's why all the NATO states supported this, even though I think the deal itself, the PREPSA, is just unsustainable over the long haul. But I could be wrong about that.
Now, in your view, why is it so important for NATO to expand into this region and into the Southern Balkans? What is NATO's end goal here? And will this NATO expansion ensure security for the region? Or, to the contrary, might it pull the region into more conflict in the future?
Well, we have to understand NATO is the United States, the United States State Department. So that is their objective, to get Macedonia into NATO, and likewise, like they just got Montenegro into NATO. They want the Balkans firmly, squarely into NATO if they can do it. They'd also like to get Serbia into NATO, and it basically told Serbia that if you cut a deal here on Kosovo, with trading land back and forth, redrawing borders, then we can move forward. But Pompeo recently made a statement to that effect, that if you read between the lines. So they want to get all the Balkans into NATO if they can. You have Croatia in there, Montenegro was just put in there, Macedonia was put in there, because the Balkans have always been critical. It's a pivotal location. Between east and west, north and south, all the oil pipelines into Europe from the Middle East will be going through the Balkans. And then you have the control there over the Dardanelles. and access to the Black Sea and egress by Russia. So the getting as much of the Balkans into NATO as they possibly can is an American objective, right? And then also, you know, you have Camp Bondsteel there sitting in Kosovo, and that's really what the Kosovo War was all about. I haven't been to Camp Bondsteel, but apparently it's so large that you can see it from outer space. And they have Camp Bondsteel in there to keep control and domination over the Balkans. So Macedonia is just, you know, a part of the pie as they see it.
We're on the air with Dr. Francis Boyle, Professor of International Law at the University of Illinois College of Law, here on the Allegos Radio and the Allegos Interview Series. And earlier you mentioned the role of Matthew Nemitz, who of course was the UN's special mediator for the Macedonia dispute. He was in this position for over two decades. I'll mention here.
Matthew, let me interrupt here.
Yes.
UN special mediator. Everyone knew Nemitz was there representing the State Department. That was just a cutout. It was exactly like the Vance Owen negotiations, where I advised the Bosnian government on those. Everyone knew Cyrus Vance represented the United States State Department and the coterie of lawyers that he had around him. He was allegedly there as the United Nations special representative representing the United Nations. But everyone there knew he spoke for the U.S. State Department, and the Vance Owen peace plan, which I did read and advised the Bosnians on, it was all drawn up by his de facto State Department lawyers. So, again, you know, this is a bit of American legerdemain. Let's bring in our guy and give him some type of UN imprimatur to do our work for us. You have to understand that about Nimitz and his appointment. We've been through this. I was through this before with Cyrus Vance for the Bosnians. So it's the same modus operandi by the Americans.
And Nimitz is something of a protege of sorts of Cyrus Vance. They've worked together. If one looks at their bios, basically, they've worked together going back to the 1970s in the State Department, from what I understand.
I believe you're correct. That is correct. It's typical the Americans. They haul out one of their longtime imperial apparatchiks, and then they sort of baptize him with the blue of the United Nations to give him credibility. But he's still basically working for the U.S. State Department. That's my reading of Nimitz, sure. And that was what Vance did in the Vance-Owen negotiations, right?
Now, in an investigation that I conducted regarding Matthew Nimitz, some interesting things came up, one being an NGO that Nimitz himself founded, and it's based in Thessaloniki, which is Greece's second largest city, and in fact, it's the capital of the Greek region of Macedonia in northern Greece. This NGO is called the Center for Democracy and Reconciliation in Southeastern Europe. It receives funding from the State Department, the British Foreign Office, the European Union, even the Greek Foreign Ministry. And what's interesting about it is that it publishes history textbooks that are distributed to schools in many Balkan countries. And these books, long before the Prespa Agreement, recognized the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, which was its official UN name, simply as Macedonia. But there's also other things about Nimitz as well that came up in this investigation as well. He remains on the board of directors of this NGO. He's not just the founder, but he's still on the board of directors, but he's also on the board of advisors of an outfit called the National Committee on American Foreign Policy. And the vice chairman of this committee, Nancy Soderberg, is the former vice president of the International Crisis Group. And this International Crisis Group in 2011 proposed the name Republic of North Macedonia, and the name that ended up coming out of the Prespa Agreement. And There's other things as well. Nimitz is the former chief operating officer of General Atlantic LLC, which was a shareholder in Denmark's Saxo Bank, which operated a banking subsidiary in Greece for a period of time in recent years. In light of all of the above revelations, can an argument be made by either side or by both sides that Matthew Nimitz was not impartial in his role as mediator between the two countries and the Macedonia dispute? And on this basis, could either country or both countries dispute the PRESPA agreement based on a conflict of interest?
Well, as I said before, Nimitz was there as a U.S. imperial apparatchik to ram an agreement through the throats of both Macedonia and Greece, no matter what, so that they could get, the Americans could get Macedonia into NATO, which they have now done, no matter what the cost to the Macedonians and the Greeks. Now, whether you would actually be able to impeach Nimitz legally is another issue. I'm aware of his background. I pointed out he's also in cahoots. He's working in cahoots there with Soros. And, you know, Hungary just threw Soros out of Hungary. Soderbergh, you know, longtime U.S. imperial apparatchik. That's the way these people work. And, you know, the Americans have had this objective of getting as much of the Balkans into NATO as they can since the collapse of the former Yugoslavia. Indeed, that was the purpose of the exercise. So, you know, I haven't spent an enormous amount of time, you know, researching Nimitz's background as you have, but that's my assessment of the situation. It would be hard to, attack this agreement by impeaching his alleged neutrality, and clearly he was not neutral. But I think I've articulated to you, in my opinion, the strongest legal arguments there under the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. But clearly he was not impartial. No, of course not. You could just read that document.
We're on the air with Dr. Francis Boyle, scholar of international law at the University of Illinois College of Law, here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series. Dr. Boyle, another one of the much touted highlights of the PRESPA agreement is that it is supposedly erga omnes, meaning that the new name of North Macedonia is to be used universally for all uses, at least as far as I understand. Is the PRESPA agreement binding upon other countries, though, in this regard? For instance, I see that while the U.S. has recognized North Macedonia, Russia continues to just recognize Macedonia, while that country's president, George Ivanov, refuses to sign any legislation that bears the name North Macedonia. So what is your take on this issue?
Well, Michael, they can call it erga omnes all they want to, but that does not bind other governments in the world. The only way this could happen would be if there is a United Nations Security Council resolution adopting and approving the PREPSA and ordering every state in the world to recognize North Macedonia, the name North Macedonia. That would be Article 25 of the UN Charter. The members of the United Nations agree to accept and carry out the decisions of the Security Council in accordance with the present charter. But until that happens, which my understanding it hasn't, other states are, you know, free to use the old name if they want to. Now, obviously, the Greek government or a new Greek government may or may not object. There could be diplomatic correspondence. Perhaps there could be retortions over this. But no one can force another state to change this name recognition if they don't want to. So there it is, in my perspective.
Now, Dr. Boyle, you mentioned the UN Security Council. My understanding is that the agreement was delivered to the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres. And my understanding is that the PRESPA agreement has been registered with the UN, but not as part of any sort of Security Council binding resolution. So what does the registration of the PRESPA agreement at the United Nations mean in legal terms?
Right. Well, I used to teach United Nations law at Harvard and then to undergraduates, and then I taught here for several years. So the registration with the UN basically only means that Greece and now North Macedonia can invoke it, the PRESPA at the UN in whatever fora that it might come up in the United Nations system itself. But the registration with the UN does not bind other states one way or the other. So if, you know, Russia still wants to keep calling it Macedonia, they can keep calling it Macedonia. And, you know, if other states want to do that, they can. So the registration does not really bind any other state. And, you know, people have to keep that in mind here when looking at this whole series and sequence of events. I suspect you'll have people making different claims. And I'm just trying to sort out these legal claims from my perspective as someone who is interested in the well-being of both the Greeks and the Macedonians.
Now, let's look at some concerns that the people of each respective country have. I'm starting with a part of Greece. There are fears, Dr. Boyle, in Greece that despite language and terminology in the PRESPA agreement, which prevents irredentist actions toward either country on the part of the other, that the recognition of a Macedonian ethnicity on the part of Greece opens the door to the recognition of a Macedonian minority within Greece. And indeed, there was a recent BBC report talking about such a minority. So the fear in Greece is that such a minority could then give rise to another Balkan-style conflict and separatist movement. And the argument is even being made that the name North Macedonia implies that there is a South Macedonia that it should eventually be reunited with. And there's some who feel that this is not a far-fetched scenario in light of maps that have circulated of a so-called Greater Macedonia, which include Greek territory. So how do you see this issue as a possibility?
Well, you know, to be honest about it, obviously, I think there are some legitimate fears here to that effect, yes. But if you read the agreement itself, it tries to nail down North Macedonia as best as possible. I mean, I've criticized the agreement, okay, so please understand that. But the agreement itself has really tried to put North Macedonia here into a straitjacket. So I don't know, even though I don't discount these fears. But on the other hand, given the current situation and that agreement, if the agreement is actually implemented, I don't think these fears would, at the end of the day, be realized in a political sense. But all I can say is if you read the document, it does appear that they've tried to put North Macedonia here into a straitjacket. There's no question about it, in my opinion. So I'm not discounting the fears.
So let's pick up on that. On the flip side, you have made this argument, Dr. Boyle, that the PRESPA agreement places Greece's neighbor in a straitjacket and essentially strips away a lot of its sovereignty and places it under Greek control. So could you clarify what you mean by this? And for instance, are you referencing flyovers on the part of the Greek Air Force over that country's territory?
Well, obviously, in this very short interview, I can't go through all of it, but you know, just speaking from the perspective of an international law professor who has actually been involved in negotiating and drafting of these agreements, there's just major, in my opinion, impositions here, encroachments on the sovereignty of Macedonia beyond anything I have seen, you know, in recent memory in some of these negotiations I've been involved in, say, over in the Balkans, which, you know, again, in my perspective, raises the question, can this really work given these infringements, encroachments on Macedonian sovereignty, and basically subordinating Macedonia to Greece legally. I don't know if that is really healthy for both states or either state, and I don't know at the end of the day how long that can hold up between you and me. I just don't know. I can't predict the future. As I said, I haven't been to Macedonia. I have been to Greece. I spent a good deal of time in Greece. So that's just the concerns I have in reading through this document. Yes.
Now, Dr. Boyle, as we get close to wrapping up, there has been a lot of chatter and there has even been an official nomination of the prime ministers of the two countries, Alexis Tsipras and Zoran Zaev, for a Nobel Peace Prize as a result of signing the PRESPA agreement. And these calls, as far as I understand, were first put out there by Foreign Policy magazine. And what's interesting here is that the CEO of the parent company of Foreign Policy magazine also happens to be on the board of directors of an NGO called IREX, which is listed as a donor to Matthew Nimitz's NGO, the Center for Democracy and Reconciliation in Southeastern Europe. We mentioned it earlier. It's based in Thessaloniki, Greece. So, Dr. Boyle, let me ask you, do you believe that Tsipras and Zaev deserve the Nobel Prize?
Well, let me say this. Foreign Policy was originally set up by the Ford Foundation. And we here in the United States know full well that the Ford Foundation is a front organization for the CIA. So you could figure that out from there if that's what you want to do. I mean, I guess if they're going to nominate these two fellows for the Nobel Peace Prize, you know, they gave a Nobel Peace Prize to Henry Kissinger for his genocidal war against Vietnam. They gave one to Obama for doing absolutely nothing. So from my perspective, the Norwegians there who give this prize out surely have a wicked sense of humor. So I don't know what they're going to do. But remember, Norway is a member of NATO. So these Nobel Peace Prizes given out by Norway have a tendency to coincide with the interests of the NATO alliance. But I mean, I have to say, Michael, for someone of my generation who opposed the Vietnam War, after they gave a Nobel Peace Prize to Kissinger, it was pretty clear to me, and I think others of my generation, that this is a total joke and a fraud. But if people want to take it seriously, I guess you can't. I never have. And indeed, I've been, you know, repeatedly asked to, as a professor of international law since I started teaching at Harvard in 1976, and, you know, people have asked me to make Nobel Peace Prize nominations. I just broke out laughing. You know, it, for me, someone of my generation, this will always be the Kissinger War Prize. So there it is. So I don't take it seriously, but, you know, I guess others might. They very well might try to sanitize this agreement, to whitewash it, right, by putting the fix in up there in Oslo in this NATO state. Because as we've seen, as I've argued, the whole objective here was to sort of bootstrap Macedonia into NATO by hook or by crook. So that being said, and since, you know, Norway is a NATO state and these so-called Nobel Peace Prizes are given out there by Norway, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to whitewash this whole thing by giving a Nobel Peace Prize to the two of them.
Now, we're running out of time here, but one final question, Professor Boyle, before we close out our interview. You've spoken about the validity or lack thereof of the PRESPA agreement with several media outlets in Greece's northern neighbor. Just out of curiosity, have any Greek media or any Greek organizations approached you at any time to discuss the legal aspects of the PRESPA agreement?
No, you're the first, Michael, and I'm very happy to, well, actually, I did get a call at one from one Greek media, and I just, you know, all these issues were so complicated, all I could say was, well, you know, I stand by the comments I made in the Macedonian press. And then he accepted that, and that was that. But you're the first major news media source I have given an interview to on this matter, and I appreciate the opportunity. I have a lot of friends there in Greece. I've been there all up and down that country. I even brought my new bride over there to Greece shortly after we were married to see Greece. So, but I'm afraid I just don't see this agreement lasting. I don't think the Americans really cared. They just wanted to get Macedonia into NATO, no matter what the cost there to the Greeks and the Macedonians. And I don't think they really had to do this agreement just over the name. But, you know, again, these are my tentative conclusions just reading through these documents. And I would strongly recommend that, you know, you put together a committee there of Greek constitutional law experts and international law experts to try to sort out some of the issues that we discussed today.
Well, Professor Boyle, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today here on the Dialogos Radio and the Dialogos interview series, and for taking the time to analyze this very complex issue and for sharing your insights and your thoughts with us today.
Well, again, thank you for having me on. My best to all my friends over there in Greece. And I hope this can be sorted out, because I'd like to see this dispute resolved peacefully between both countries and both peoples.
Wonderful. Well, I think that's everybody's hope and desire. And once again, Professor Boyle, thanks for taking the time to discuss and to analyze this issue with us today.
Sure. Happy to talk with you again.
Follow the Dialogos Radio on Facebook and Twitter and remain connected to all our latest news and updates. Check us out today at facebook.com/dialogosmedia and at twitter.com/dialogosmedia.
We just wrapped up this week's edition of the Dialogos interview series and our interview with Professor of International Law, Dr. Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois College of Law, here on the Dialogos Radio. The podcast of this very interesting interview and this discussion on the legality of the PRESPA agreement will soon be available on our website, dialogosmedia.org, and also in Apple Podcasts, TuneIn.com, Stitcher, Podbean, and other major podcast listings. On our website, you can also find our articles and written work, including my extensive expose on Matthew Nimitz, the supposedly neutral United Nations special mediator on the Macedonia name dispute, revealing his many conflicts of interest, and a prior history which could not be said to be favorable toward Greece and Greek interests. All of that can be found on our website, dialogosmedia.org. That's dialogosmedia.org. And with that, today's show is just about ready to come to a close. It was great being back on the air with you again after so long, and the Alagos Radio should be back in 2 weeks for another English language edition. Until then, for the Alagos Radio, this is Michael Navradakis. Thanks for listening.